hear me from it?
Oh, now we're good.
Yeah, I was in the other room waiting for you because you were fucking late by almost 30 seconds.
Oh, that's funny.
We're going to keep that in the recording?
Funny, but true.
Yeah. True.
Yes. Although, does 8:30 mean when it strikes 8:30 or within the minute of 30? I guess we should get clear on that so I don't ruffle your feathers.
Yeah, and then write it down. Yes. And then dock each other if we show up late. I mean, okay. James Brown charged people, his band, $50 every time they made a mistake.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well,
Prince did the same
early,
thing.
Early, you're late. How about we just we'll institute right. That as our policy.
And if you don't believe in time, then you're fine.
That's right. That's right. Okay. Well, I'm glad we got that out of the way.
Yeah.
What's up?
Well, how does it feel to finally hit a million subscribers?
I just wasn't prepared.
Yeah.
For all of the women.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know how you deal with it either.
It's tough because I used to be able to go out into the neighborhood without being bothered by people wanting to talk to me about this, that, and the other thing. But, you know, I'm not going to complain because I have a pretty good life. I just bought a...
And enlightened people don't complain, as you know.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, what do you want to talk about, Jason?
Well, I feel that you probably have more stories from your trip that we haven't looked at yet.
That trip was 10 lifetimes ago. But, here's a couple things I'll just throw out. First of all, I did not have anything, but I knew that the second I got on here. Well, one of the things I like about doing the podcast with you is that you do trigger like the bigger parts of me. I was actually at a gathering of Sufis. You've heard of them.
Mm-hmm.
The Whirlers. I mean, didn't you name one of your children Rumi?
Rumi, yes.
Yeah. But there's this one teacher in which she's the daughter of, one of the more well-known teachers, and she's sort of stepping into it. But what she lacks in organization and experience, she more than makes up for with intoxicated energy that kind of tangents out of control. And while she was doing that last night, and I was watching the spiritual leader of the Sufis, who one of my students came to a group and said he reminded her of a mafia boss. But he just has kind of a way of like controlling what's going on in the room, for better or worse. But anyway, I was like, oh, I see myself in her. Like when I get touched in a certain place, like I'm like a spinning top. And I think all of my adult life has been to, A, monetize that. I mean, when they first started to pay me for talking, I was like, they're going to pay me for this? And the second thing is to find the balance between completely like merging with the energy and letting it take you and maintaining a certain kind of concise sobriety.
Yes.
So. It's interesting because I get around certain kinds of people. I'm always confused and don't know what to say. And then I get like someone like you and there's all these things inside me. I didn't know where they're there that they sort of want to come out. So one of the things that crossed my mind, one of our favorite subjects is human design, is I was seeing this thing about manifestors and that, you know, their time is waning, that we built the world, but now we're moving to a time of the projectors to teach. And that what manifestors are best at is to bring in this wave of energy with our initiatory impulses and like kind of give it to people to do something, not for us to do something with, but for them to do something with. And I thought, Vladimir Zelensky, Vladimir Putin, Adolf Hitler, all manifestors. So being a manifestor doesn't mean you're enlightened or something. But it is something about the autonomy of uncertainty that you have to take your energy and put it out there. And particularly for some of us through our voice, because it, for all of us, it goes through our throat center. So I was thinking about like the different ways that people can be themselves, like, because when I talk to people I'm close with, who I can have kind of a conversation with somebody who has some awareness of who they are or what it is that makes up their design, because everybody's completely different. It's interesting to me that because of trauma and conditioning, we all have sort of the same problems, which is a kind of resistance to the truth. But the thing is, the truth of who we are is different for different people. And I know that if I ever, I, you know, I love archetypes and astrology and human design. Any divination science is kind of like an easy, and people think, oh, you know, I don't believe in astrology or whatever. It's not even that I believe in it. It's that these things give, these maps give a system for helping a person to understand what their archetypal nature is. Oh, one more thing. Saw the movie Hadestown, which is based on, it was a movie of a Broadway musical. It was like the filming of the Broadway musical called Hadestown, which is two love stories, the love story of Hades, speaking of archetypes, and Persephone, Hades, Lord of the Underworld, and Persephone, the one who was the queen in the underworld, at least half time. And then Orpheus, and I forget her name, Euthyphrates or something. Anyway, I saw that and I was really impacted by, like, I just love talking to people. I never get bored with having relationships with people to understand what they're specifically supposed to do. So just to tie that back together, for me, I have this gift to bring this wave of energy in this, and it's all based around like what I feel like I want to do. And then the thing that I want to do or I want to say is something about where I'm going, but it's also about something I'm going to give to people. But it's never what the initiatory impulse is about. I'll do the impulse and then I'll find out what it's for after. But then when I get with other people who are not like that, I was talking with Sarah yesterday, business partner, and we have sat and chatted with you for almost 2 years, you helping us with our business Effigy. And we were talking about just how to do things differently. And we were in this, not argument, but this difference, which is, and she said, well, let's talk to Jason about it. And I said, you know, I don't want to talk to Jason because I'm waiting to hear what my next thing is. And I don't necessarily want somebody to influence me because I feel like the deadness of not knowing what's next is always something when I was less evolved that I tried to fill by going and getting some expert to help me. And now I'm come to realize that that's not what I'm supposed to do. So I uncomfortably told her that. And then she came back a day later and she said, I'd realize what it is. I want to talk to Jason. And she said, because she needs collaborators. I don't. And she needs somebody to help her to kind of like, she's a generator, so she has to wait to respond. So if somebody puts something in her space, that actually is helping her. And anybody who puts something in my space is interrupting me and creating a new chore for me. So anyway, all this is to say is everybody, how we're all different and what can we talk about that?
Yeah, I think human design is so amazing, primarily because of how practical it has been. Unfortunately, it's been around long enough that plenty of humans have turned it into a religion, just like they tend to do with a lot of things. My understanding, though, is not that's not how it was meant to be. And you,
how do people turn it into a religion? Just so I know what you're talking about.
If you get in front of the wrong person who is trained in that, depending on who trained them and how, you will walk away feeling like you are living in a prison of rules about how you are supposed to be.
Uh-huh. Meaning, like, if I'm a manifester, it means I can't collaborate with people.
That's right. I'm a generator. Yeah. I literally should sit on my couch and wait for the world to come and get me, which, of course, is idiotic if you care about not seeing your children starve.
Yeah.
Right. So,
well, how do you, can you speak to that specific thing? Because I know many, I mean, most of the planet is generators, and being told that they should wait to respond, or projectors that are waiting for an invitation, that it implies not doing anything. So
yeah,
what does it really mean?
One of my first questions, like years ago when I started getting readings, and I don't even think they call them readings. Like you get an analysis. Like it's not something that should vary so much from person to person, like astrology can. You know how it seems like astrology people really have their things that they kind of focus on.
I think because it's not so. Astrology has 12 planets and all these. There's so much math and there's so many things in it that you can. There's no one thing about it that's straightforward, but human design has something, the profile numbers, your type, your authority.
It's extremely very structured.
Yeah.
And so one of my first questions was, if I'm supposed to, I had already proven to myself by then, which this would have been like 2012 when I had my first reading from somebody who was a professional, I had already kind of bumbled my way in because I had spent so much time trying to build businesses in the world of selling and stuff to realize that, like, I don't go rushing in a room and tell people how great I am and what I have and that they should buy it. Like, that obviously was not my approach that led to success, and I had learned that already. But even in the word response, which is a huge part of what a generator is, you will tend to make decisions best when you're responding to things. And human design is about your relationship with the other. So like another aura. So that's what it's helping you make decisions about energetically, about how to navigate your path when other auras come around and what you do with that. So when we're saying you respond, well, you're responding to another aura. But my question was, what about I need to feed my kids? And luckily I had chosen someone who had a way more open mind than other people. And she said, well, you are also then responding to an internal impulse to feed your children. And so that got me just started on a completely different way of thinking about that mechanism. And then because I'm kind of practical and scheming or whatever, there's no good word for that, but meticulous about orchestrating things. I started
very Aquarian of you. The Aquarius is the architect. So you are an Aquarian. So we could say in astrology, you very much, you see the future inside yourself and then you have to try to create the world.
That's right. I try to put the parts together. And so I tried to answer the question, how do I engineer a world where I get to respond to things? And so that's when my business started changing and, you know, it all went down that road just based on that single kernel of understanding.
Well, a couple of question, and it's funny because I have two projector clients, but one of them, it had come to me. I mean, I don't know as much about human design as you do, but he's a projector, and projectors are the teachers, and are supposed to wait for the invitation. And they say there's a certain torture because people have to invite you to things. But I realized that what I'd said to him that, you know, you can create an invitation to yourself. And it was sort of remarkable to both of us because there was a certain passivity that he had, like he was helpless. But he wasn't creating a pathway for his own opportunity. So I feel like it's just another way of saying what you said. My question is, that I've heard for generators, you know, like what you said is you about responding, but that there's this thing, don't ride the wave. So when you're emotional, you shouldn't respond. Is that how you, like, how does that fit with what you're saying? And is this something you've heard?
Yeah. The thing that I like most about human design is that it is a journey, characterized by constant experimentation into becoming more of who you are on an energetic level. We're talking about your physical form and how it's navigating through the world. So like, that's what is most attractive to me about it, because I've sat through plenty of astrology readings and you walk away and you're all hyped up and you have no idea what to do about it.
Yeah.
Like that happens a lot. And I even haven't had enough, like when you talk about it, I don't feel that. So maybe it's just the skill of the person. I don't even understand.
Well, when someone would say I'm an astrologer or something, I'd say, no way. Like because it's not a religion to me. The purpose, when I first started doing readings, I'd never even had one. I won't get long into that story, but just to say that when I started to do things because I had this ability to read things, whether it was through astrology or I did fingerprints and that sort of thing, I always somewhere intuitively, without even knowing myself that well, because I wasn't that much of a teacher, was realizing that I was using it to start a relationship with people. And eventually I realized that there were two things that were happening with me with people. One was someone would pay me to get a reading, and then someone else would pay me to guide them. And that guide them was a step after, and that I created a separation from it, that giving you information is, and people always would say, oh my God, that's right. Well, what do I do about it? And my answer would be 40 minutes into a session, like, well, here's how I would help you. But I would never tell people, because it's not possible. Like, I don't think there isn't any one particular answer. And I do think that the value of having guidance, which you've been a guide to me, and is to have someone holding that story with you, having a shorthand that's created, and actually speaking to you about the details, the devil's in the details.
Yeah. So to answer your question about the wave, generators. So the human design that you find out on the internet right now is, I guess you could call it version 2. The original revelation was very simple in how the body graphs were constructed. All you got was a body graph that said you're designed to do or you're designed to wait. And you saw all of the defined or undefined centers on the body graph, just like you do today, and all the gates and channels and stuff like that. There was no meta layer of generator, manifestor. All that came later. And actually with quite a bit of controversy that caused some of the original people involved in helping bring the knowledge over here to leave and become enemies. And so I'm always like the truth seeker. Like if I find something like that, like I dig into that and then I try to make sense of the whole mess. And so what I discovered is that there are actually quite profound truths that you can get from your body graph just by looking at like the undefined centers. The undefined ones are the ones that are prone to conditioning, right? They're actually where life shows up for us.
Yeah.
So when you ask me about the wave, my emotional center is undefined, meaning what I'm feeling is highly influenced by who or what I'm around. Right? And so for me, because my truth, for lack of a better word, is in my sacral center. Like if you say, do you want vanilla ice cream? I'm going to get a yes or a no hit right in my gut. For my chart, that's what I'm to follow. Like that's what it is arguing. Hey, you will engage yourself better and make better decisions if you honor that all the time. Other generators have a defined emotional center, and that's where they're going to look for their truth. And that is rarely available to them in the moment for this response. They might have to wait a little bit. I forget what Sarah's is.
I think it's that.
I mean, it makes sense that that would be. So the cool thing about human design is that the deeper I looked, the less cosmic it became. Like, I don't know how the revelation worked.
Yeah.
The guy really basically was saying there was some sort of alien entity in his house. Like, I have no idea. But I know that when I put it to a test,
it's
very practical. And I know that this guy was talking about new, you know, I was always curious, like, why is this affecting people? I had never asked that about astrology. Like, why is this a thing? Why is there any truth in it at all? And the human design revelation came with the story. There are neutrinos. He called them neutrinos. They weren't discovered until decades later by scientists, and now they're a thing. He argued years ago that they had mass, and that information stream, right, is what impacts your physical form at birth to create the chart, really. In human design, you have two birthdays, one where that info set is captured when the soul enters the body, and then one when the body emerges from the womb. And so the deeper I dug, the more answers there were. And then when I took it out as an experiment to like figure out who I was, the more confirmation I received. And I could also see all the conditioning that you talk about, because I'm here to respond. I'm here. I know what people want. My conditioning shows up in my emotions because they're open and I feel them strongly. Like, I know what people want from me. I know what they're expecting. I didn't realize that that's not my truth. And it makes it very hard for people with a chart like that sometimes to speak their truth, which is why you can spend your whole life saying no when you mean yes or vice versa.
Yeah. Well, we both have those emotional centers. So it's the same for me. That there's a challenge to say what's there, because it's so what enters my space is other people's feelings and conditioning, and I'm aware of that, and there's a ever-present danger to to say, as began with my own family, as saying what the truth was, even though reminds me of a Jonathan
Richman.
I suck
at controlling it. For as good as I am with words, I feel like if I opened that up, like a nuclear bomb would go off, like at the dumbest things.
Yeah. Well, I think you say the dumbest things because that's that part of you that sort of has a, what's the word, whimsical, philosophical,
well, like my boundaries.
Humor.
Yeah. I was raised to believe my boundaries aren't important. So I'm still working on that.
Right. But, and the reason why you laugh though, and you call it dumb is not just for the listeners. It's not really that it's dumb. It's that what you respond to, what you feel is not always congruent to what you think should be the response in the moment.
Yeah.
And I think I have sort of the same thing. I mean, someone asked me last night, because, you know, I'm playing at the restaurant or whatever, and like they asked me, they were talking about like I just said that the people listening to me probably enjoy it more than I do, because my experience is always, what, you know, if I'm at home playing, I'm just playing music. When I'm out in public, I am playing music amidst all this energy entering me, and it's very disruptive, and a lot of it's unconscious, plus there's drinking and socializing and tribal activities, and I find it deeply disturbing, and it's one reason why I do it, because I'm learning to gather my own center in the midst of it, which I have done really well. But I think it's interesting because I just feel upset a lot. For the first year, I felt really upset all the time because I was just picking up on all these said and not said things that were going on in this space around me. And everybody, including the owner, wondered, like, why are you taking this so seriously? You're just playing piano in a restaurant. Nobody cares. Everybody loves it. Like, I didn't notice any difference between this night and that. And it's because of what you're saying. Like, my relationship to it is more profound because it's entered my space and I have no control over it, and it really affects me. And arguably, sorry, last thing, I think to be a person sensitive to the world around you is to be able to feel what other people were not willing to feel. That is what I'm picking up in the space, is all the things that are off-gassing from people unconsciously that they can't process. So as a healer and getting paid, I was excellent at transmuting that as part of the relationship, but not so good out in life in general.
I think the two most valuable parts of human design are the obvious, which is the insight that it can give you about the way you operate.
Yeah.
But number two is the sense of freedom that it can provide, because it dares to make the audacious claim that perhaps the constraints that the matrix tells you are things that you should transcend and overcome are the very things that should be embraced and celebrated. Totally backwards. So human design, call it fatalistic or whatever, you will not change who you are. You can be miserable if you try, but it will never change. And I think there is such freedom in the surrendering to that. And then you can figure out, oh my goodness, how do I use these constraints, which have no story until you put them there? And we were trained to say they are bad, weaknesses to shore up. How can they be my greatest advantage?
Well, if I was giving, not advice, but if I was going to say to someone, like, I think the one thing I've learned over a lifetime of like spiritual work, but also working with other people, is that thing that you're most afraid of in yourself around this, the moment you say, okay, I'm interested to explore that, there's such a liberation that can come just from that alone. Just being able to say, well, for example, for me, you know, at the heart of my human design is really only one thing. Do whatever you want. Don't ask permission. Let people know what you're going to do so they can make decisions around it. But it's about following your desire. And all I ever knew was getting in trouble for that. Big trouble for that at school, at home, opening my mouth. And why am I upsetting people? I'm just saying whatever. And as I really, in the last couple years, particular, I am just doing, I don't have a partner. So this is also a big thing to not be in a relationship. And I don't know if that's permanent or temporary, but as a temporary thing for several years, being on my own, is this feeling of what it's like to actually do what I want and admit to myself, I didn't live like that for most of my life, not consciously, because sometimes I was a, you know, passive aggressive, if you will. But just suffice to say to anybody who's listening to this, like, lean into the thing that you're afraid of, because it's not going to kill you. It's actually going to emancipate you, because there is no monster under the bed. It's all created inside you. And the second you say, I'm going to open up to this, is the opportunity to become who you really are.
My human design chart, my root center, which is the energy center at the bottom, at your base, you know, is open. And I didn't learn that till I was like 30 something. And what that means is that it's pretty common for people like me to feel this never-ending sense of pressure and like survival threat.
It's a good thing you got 10 children, because I think that really has prevented you from feeling like, I'm joking.
No, it is great, because with all of these auras in the house, this is why I never want to leave. It feels best here, because all of my parts are unified.
But the pressure that a person, I don't think anybody can probably fathom, especially in this day and age, what it would be like to have 10 children. Like 10, it's not.
Yes, but the pressure isn't the product. It's me. And so I could have $30 million in the bank and that would not go away. And so human design gave me the insight to realize it's not going to go away. So there's no need to medicate it. There's no need to ignore it. There is a need to look at it and embrace it as part of myself And that completely shifts your relationship with everything in your reality, because when I feel that feeling before I wake up in the morning, when my eyes open, it is already there. As though the world is going to end at 6 p.m. and I can't do anything about it. That is my whole life. And just to have even the insight that human design gives you, that that's what the way you're made.
Well, I'd like to say something about that about you, because we did have a conversation several months ago, because, and I just remembered it right now, about you. And, you know, in astrology, and just to say, we're talking about human design. In astrology, it's just where the planets were in the sky when you're born. So yeah. It's not woo-woo, because it's basically
the
where the
thing.
Planets
same
are.
Same as human design, because it affected the information coming.
Yeah, and all the interpretation someone might agree with, but it is where the planets were. So what you're describing is the myth of Chiron. And in the myth of Chiron, he was the only god who had a relationship to humans, and he was the outsider who basically brought healing to the humans, but then he got injured. I'm shortening this story, and he couldn't heal himself. So the myth of the wounded healer is the myth of Chiron. You can go look it up. And he had to find some way to use his injury for good, because he was unable to heal himself. And so Chiron, which doesn't get a lot of airtime in astrology, I think it's further out than Pluto, but I can't remember. But Chiron is the cycle from, like, your sun cycle is 365 days, the moon is 30 days or 28 days. So Chiron, it's a 50 year cycle, and you, Jason, just turning 50, correct?
In February, yep.
Yeah, in February. So you're on what's called the Chiron return, which is the first time, because all your life where you have Chiron in your chart, and I don't know if you'll remember this, but it's a little refresher, but where you have Chiron in your chart is the injury that never heals. Yeah. And in your case, it is about lack, because you have Chiron in the house of money. Well, also the house of money, which is your own ability to make money, because there's another house where the money comes through other people. But you have Chiron in your south node, which is past life karma connected. So you have this past life karma of, like, feeling like there's never enough money. So it's so funny that you said this in your human design, and it's in your actual chart. But this year is the year where that you can have the first feeling that maybe you don't have to feel that way anymore.
Oh, I'm glad I made it this long.
What's that?
I'm glad I made it this far then.
Yeah. And I think what I said to you is in this coming year, because up until February 2027, because you were born in 77, there is an opportunity for you to feel that the efforts that you're making to bring resources in will actually be enough, that you'll feel it's enough, and that you can get wealthy from your own effort. Also, yeah. You have Chiron in Aries, and Aries is about doing it yourself. So this is potentially a big year for you, and I'm just going to make sure that I stay tethered in case you drop me a few million or whatever.
That's right. I need your wiring information before that would happen, so you'll know when it's coming.
Yeah.
But all of this you can piece together and experiment with. And I think that human design, without that, I would have, like, I'm a trial and error kind of person. So I would have bumped into the walls. I would have been much bloodier and kind of gotten some of that understanding. But it is amazing. Like, when I work with people, or when I worked with you and Sarah, it just gives an immediate snapshot of what we're working with. And my goal with people, like, I don't, like with you guys, I didn't know any answers. My goal is to help you find them. And they're all coming from you.
Well, it's interesting. And maybe this is for the next podcast. Maybe you can, because, you know, when we worked with you, well, Sarah just for listeners' sake, you know, she came to Berea where you were living in Kentucky to do breath work, I think, with Marin and women that were pregnant, and met you. But at some point, you know, like I was very much not involved in our business, which is where I am right now. The wheels have pretty much fallen off because I just don't want to do this. So, but she started, she met someone who, and she was going to do a little bit of work with you. And this woman had said to her, "Oh, Jason, the wizard." But it was like there was this promise that you were going to like find the people and get us, make us rich or something. Like that's how she sort of took it. And then she started working with you and I started meeting with you as well. And it took a good while, like 6 to 8 months, to realize that
he doesn't know
whether whether or not, well, yeah, whether or not you could have helped us to succeed in our business, because you definitely have helped businesses to create the situation where they made lots of money. But in our case, when I look back at that time, what happened was, is that who we were was not defined. I wrote 2 books, and the Trauma Code, whose name came from you, and the subsequent book that you encouraged me not to put out on in with the Trauma Code, I feel like all the content I created that came out of the time I worked with you, and I cannot credit this to anybody else other than my own genius self, was a result of you circling back, whether intentionally or not, to help us to clarify what it was we're selling. And I think for someone like me whose entire business model and what I do is A, my own creation, doesn't have another business to compare it to.
Intuitively led.
Yeah. And I think that my 4 levels and 4 regions, which I think you helped me to name as well, was something that was channeled to me just like human design was channeled. And I just didn't know how to tell people what it was like. Do I do breath work? Do I do readings? Do I do what? What do we do? And I think that in that time, we created so much content, which now I don't need to create any more content because of that. But when Sarah asked me yesterday or the day before about meeting with you, it's that we have all this perfect system. There's nothing more that needs to be created, but people need to do it. And I'm not interested in trying to, which I did for 35 years, to get people and come and do my work. So Sarah's feeling a little bit lost in that. I am too, because all this is to say that I think that you help businesses, but the thing is, for somebody to make money, if you will, in this particular climate and life world that we're in right now, they have to know who they are first in order for people to find them. And I think that you are absolutely so fundamentally clear, even when you're not clear, about finding who that person really is, so that if they're going to attract the real things, they have to be who they really are. And that was a lot of our, I look back at it and I realized this yesterday, that we talked to you for like 2 years every week. And those 2 years were solely about who are we, which is not what we thought we were doing when we started with you.
Yeah. I think deep down, I feel like this thing that we call business, which up until now has been largely characterized by ways of manipulating people to do what you want, is now moving into something, because not only is that old way breaking down, as we can all see, because all of the masses have shown up and are trying to do that. And it's so disgusting that no one is now engaged anymore. But we're moving to, I think, this place where living beings impact the consciousness field by the clarity of their resonance. And they get exactly the reflection of what that is meant to be and it may be $10 million and it may be two or nothing, that's actually not what you focus on, because it's like trying to change the reflection in the mirror. You just focus on what's in the mirror. And that's the work I did with you guys, and that I try to do with myself every day. Like, we are just trying to ever distill and focus that transmission that we are.
I feel like you should say that first sentence again. I mean, when we would have talks with you, we would be so overwhelmed after it was over. And then I would re-listen to a recording of it. And it was usually one sentence you said that sort of shattered the concrete of whatever it was. And you just did that now. So can you just say the bit about resonance again? Because I was going to repeat it back and I've completely already forgotten. But
well, I think we're think we're moving out of the illusion that we can do X and make someone else do Y.
Yeah.
Like that. Agreed. It's not that it didn't work. Like, look at, I mean, there's some version of work. It's how a lot of things have been built.
Yeah.
I'm not here for that. Number one, because I think it's disgusting. But number two, I think it actually tries to run counter to the rules of reality. And you're trying to manipulate something that is actually not within your control. And the weird times that it does work for someone, we put them on magazines and write books about them so that everyone else thinks that that's kind of a possibility out there.
Yeah.
Things like Human Design say, be who you are and you get what you get, which is not what you want to put on the cover of a book, because no one wants to hear that. But I believe it's the truth.
I'll do it. I'm definitely want to put out a book of be who you are and get what you get.
And so to get what you get, you have to be who you're here to be.
Yeah.
And then the resonance of that vibration impacts the consciousness field and you get the appropriate reflection.
It's hard to, that is hard to live with for a lot of people. And I think the reason, one reason why I don't have a flair for the business, because I was popular, I had points of popularity in my 35 years where I had lots of people, but I was a different person who, well, probably I needed the popularity to learn how to do my work, but I don't really want to be having conversations with people who aren't already understanding that that's what the work is, which is the be who you are is the only thing that I'm actually interested in. Because when people start to ask about how can I manipulate reality to get what I want, I'm thinking there are lots of other places you could do that. And yeah, you say disgust and I would say repulsed. I'm repulsed by a certain arrogance of ego. But it's maybe all around the world, but it's very particularly unique in America. I mean, because I was just in Canada for a week. Canada's a different place. It's a different country. It's not really the same. But in America, like, I find that the way that people demand things of me and get angry about it and want to bend reality to their wants is not something that I want to do. So the part of me that when I was out being popular was I was just talking to anybody and everybody. And so then, yeah, I had a bigger pool to, I was saying to Sarah, cause she said, I never really had that popularity. And I said, I remember going to Chicago and it was 2008. And this woman put this talk together and I had 60 people. That was a lot of people, but I didn't know what I was doing. And like, you know, there was some attraction and people want to have this relationship, but you know, 90% of those people really were not looking for what I was offering to them. So just suffice to say that almost 100% of the population is not interested in what you just said, in be who you are and get what you get.
Well, people,
because conditioning has told them, particularly in Western culture, that, you know, get rich and famous, that's the goal.
In general, I think the more distilled your vibration becomes, the fewer people most of us will be here for.
Yeah.
And I used to say we're early. I made that joke always, like, I'm early. We're talking about things no one cares. I know that's not the right word. We're just here at the beginning because I know that's what's coming and we are going first. this way of being. And, you know, matrix thinking would say, oh, in 2008, you were doing something right. And now you're not doing something right. And that's why.
Yeah.
And that's the collective, to me, that's the problem. That's the collective insanity of the illusion that we control things we don't actually control. And if we were taught in school, instead of how to get what we want, how to want what we get, that's a way more alchemical, magical.
You didn't just make that up, did you?
I say that all the time. But yeah.
I love it.
The energy flows. It's completely opposite experience of life if that's the skill you work on.
Yeah.
And it does lead to this magical connection with the field, and you actually kind of end up getting what you want way more often if you start with the wanting what you get.
Well, I feel like our next podcast, I'd love to talk about complaints. I feel like that's a great topic, because most people live in complaints, and I feel like there's lots to explore there. And I mean, maybe the only thing needs to be said right now is that if you have a complaint, you are pushing away what is.
Yeah, that's awesome. Let's do that. And next time I'm going to show up early so that you don't start off complaining that I'm late, because that would be ironically funny.
No, I need you to, because I, you know, I'm so enlightened that I don't have problems, that you showing up late helps me see that I still have things
I'm
to work on.
I'm all about service.
So thank you for helping me to see what,
I'm giving
that
it my
I
best.
Still work. Yeah, yes. So I would come even later next time.
I will see you.
All right, bye. Got me working, boss man, working round the clock. I want me a drink of water, but you won't let Elijah stop. Big boss man, can you hear me when I call? Well, you ain't so big, you just tall, that's all. Well, I'm gonna get me a boss man, one gonna treat me right. We're coming.